That's Dolly Parton and a band called Southern Offerings. Heaven's Just a Prayer Away. 12 and a half minutes after the hour. It's a Monday morning, and that means we get to welcome Dr. Don Clark in from Garden Valley, Texas. Actually, still in Garden Valley, Texas, but he's talking to us from there, where I could see sunshine on the left side of your face. It must be just a sunny day down there, huh?
Well, it's partly cloudy, but it's about 64 degrees right at the moment.
Heading up
to above 70.
Okay. I see you got your Hawaiian shirt on. That's kind of
in
keeping with
the
climate. Okay. Well, nicely done. Dr. Don is a biochemist and a member of the board of Creation Moments. Creationmoments.com, a very important website. You ought to know who they are, know what they've got to offer. You can link to them from our site if you're so inclined. I'd recommend you take a trip over there sometime today and discover them. They're a wealth of resources, mostly having to do with young earth creationism. And one of the joys of going there is discovering, regardless of what your position is on the matter, what your belief is discovering that there is science on the side of young earth creationism. And Creation Moments does just a splendid job of presenting that to us. And so that's one of the... Well, we like him, too. We have Don here for a number of reasons.
Well, thank you. Thanks.
We like him. So,
he's a good guy, and he's making wine.
Yeah. Don tans grapes, and he's just getting into the wine business. He's one of the founding fathers of the wine industry in Texas.
Is that what? Yeah, in East Texas, right.
Yeah.
That someday they'll put up a plaque to you.
Yeah, there'll be a statue out of the Vintners Hall of Fame in Garden Valley there.
Garden Valley, Texas Wine Association will have a plaque.
There
you'll be.
You'll have your new industry.
Yeah. Your thumbprints in the concrete someplace, you'll be a famous man. Well, we like him because of his scientific background. And today we're going to talk archaeology, which, strictly speaking, is not science, is it? It's study. It's academia. It's research in the field. But science is only one of the tools they use, isn't that right?
Well, you can certainly use things of science in archaeology. But you know, with any of these things that you're looking back in time and trying to put dates to it or trying to figure out what happened. There are a lot of assumptions, and we have some assumptions in the article we're going to talk about today.
You know, one
from the ancient times that archaeology is listed in the arts catalog, not in the science catalog.
I could see that happening.
Now that I think about it, and it's in many times referred to as the soft scientists. Or the soft sciences, you know, along with sociology and anthropology, archaeology, that there's no way to do hard scientific surveys or testing experiments, that sort of thing.
Although they do use scientific tools, the radar that you can look underground with, and chemical analysis of artifacts but so many of the decisions in archaeology are made by comparing what you found with what other people have found in the similar region at similar levels. And then you can draw conclusions from that. In this case, people have found camel bones. There's an article over at Christianity Today. Also, I think I saw an article on Reuters on the same thing. And then, of course, Tel Aviv University has its own write-up of this. And they found that, you know, the search for domesticated camels has been going on for a long time. And the fly in the ointment here is in the book of Genesis. Abraham apparently owned camels and sent camels with his servant to find a wife for Isaac. And it mentions that in Genesis, but there had never been any evidence that there were, in fact, camels domesticated, at least in that part of the world, during that time. Don, what does this article talk about?
Well, this one is, they found some camel bones in the desert. South of the Dead Sea, and they wound up dating them by carbon 14, and by the dating techniques and other things. I don't know what the other things were, but they dated them to be about 10th century BC, and the camels were near a copper mine, so they made the assumption that these camels obviously were used in the copper mining industry. Or business at the time.
It's not illogical. Yeah, they might have just been passing by camels. Yeah.
But at least they, you know, they attributed it to some type of work. So they said, well, these are definitely domesticated camels, so we can attribute that the camels had to be domesticated and used, and probably, as I said, was used in this particular type of activity. Then, unfortunately, they go and make the leap and say, well, okay, this is the last time camels we find back in history are being used, so therefore the narrative, for example, of Abraham's servant Eleazar going to find a wife for Isaac, it can't be accurate, at least time frame wise.
So what they're saying is the camel remains that they found, the bones, would date to about the time of David, maybe a little older, but the time of Abraham was 1,000 years prior.
Yes, at least. And so we're, about 1,000 years, maybe so. So we're left with, their conclusion is that, hey, gee, we're not finding any other, domesticated camels older than these. The story in the Bible with Abraham's servant and the camels mentioned there, and Rebecca watering them and everything, that had to be post-date this. Now, I find that statement rather bizarre.
Well, and the article calls it overstated,
Yeah, well, very much overstated, and there's no reason to believe that the lack of credibility of the Bible, and there's more credibility in these folks who did this study and made this find. It's like they are they digging up all the sand in the desert around.
Folks are from further north. Tel Aviv University is the home organization that found these camel bones and did the research. And there does seem to be kind of an overstated conclusion to think that because they found them and dated them to the 10th century B.C., and that's the earliest they know of camels, the only evidence they have, that they didn't exist earlier. That's a long leap of logic. And in fact, in the article here, it talks about kind of an axiom that archaeologists follow, and remembering in their work that the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. And furthermore, it amazes me how, and bear in mind that Israel is a very secular nation now. These are not people out to prove what it says in the Old Testament, or ostensibly to disprove, and yet when they can reach a conclusion that disproves, archaeologists and other scientists seem to jump on that and say, aha, we've disproven what the Bible says. That seems to be the first impulse, and that irritates me a little bit.
Oh, well, it irritates me quite a bit, and and they try to make some big headlines out of it to discredit the Bible. And in fact, this, like I said, I mean, about the only thing that you can say is that these camels were probably 1,000 years, B.C. Mm-hmm. I mean, 1,000 years B.C. dating, and you don't even know that 100%. And then the only thing you could possibly say is, well, maybe they were used in the copper mining industry. Mm-hmm. And that would be the end of the story. But they had to take it, one step further. It points back again to what we've talked about, in the past, how one's worldview influences certainly what you document or what you say about your findings. There was certainly, nothing wrong with saying we found some camel bones. And there's certainly nothing wrong with saying, well, we dated them with radiocarbon dating, and it looks like they're about, 1,000 B.C., while we found these camel bones, near some copper mines, so they had to be used in domestic copper mining. That makes sense. But to go another step further just doesn't. I mean, it's not even good science, but it's not even good logic. So your worldview definitely influences how you interpret the data. And in this case, you know, the data is, you know, it's very much inconclusive as to is this the end of the discovery for domestic camels or not? Mm-hmm. It's kind of the same thing that they tried to do with the story of Moses and saying, well, we don't find any evidence, archaeological evidence for Moses. Well, in the Bible, it describes Pharaoh erasing any name of Moses off of all of the buildings. Mm-hmm. So why would you find any evidence of Moses? So it's like almost, you know, as is done in this type of thing and with creation, in trying to disprove creation, they use kind of a circular argument type of approach, where and they bring, you know, their worldview in and try to say this is proof. You know, this is proof for our worldview that the Bible is inaccurate, mm-hmm. and you can't really trust it.
Well, and in fact, what they're saying, and this is a proviso we have to make, that they made, this would be the earliest evidence of domesticated camels in the Levant, in an area that would be Israel. And we've learned from talking with John Delancey, our resident archaeologist, off and on over the last couple of years, that archaeologists need to compare their findings with other archaeologists, not only in the local area, but in other areas. For example, in this article in Christianity Today makes the point, and makes it rather well, that there are at least two academic papers written by other scientists, lecturers from Germany, and a man by the name of Titus Kennedy, who's an adjunct professor at Biola University, that shows evidence for domesticated camels in the second millennium BC, but in Egypt.
Right.
And we know there was trade northward all the time. So to believe that camels wouldn't have appeared in, maybe they didn't live in Israel, but they passed through regularly, I would think, on trading missions, and probably through that very area south of the Dead Sea where these bones were found. So what Tel Aviv University needs to do is maybe consult a little bit with some of the studies from Egypt.
Well, and that's correct, and you know, further read their Bible too, because you've got the folks, Abraham's sons, we have the whole story of Joseph being sold, obviously, into slavery, winding up in Egypt, becoming second to Pharaoh, and then the son, then the drought. You kind of know the story. Mm-hmm. I mean, how did these folks get to Egypt? Was there any camels involved in that story? Now, it doesn't say specifically that there were, but obviously Abraham had camels, so you would have thought, okay, you know, they probably traveled by camels down there, and their whole time, which is 400 years, captivity, if you will, which, you know, was kind of friendly at first for the first pharaoh because of Joseph, mm-hmm. but then turned sour there at the end, and they were really enslaved, all of the Israelites were enslaved. You know, that whole time, the camels had to be involved, and as you said, were found during that time period. So
I'm not sure what other beasts of burden they would have had. Donkeys probably, but Abraham traveled with quite an entourage, a family and livestock and tents and all the household goods of the clan, and he traveled for hundreds and hundreds of miles back and forth. It was a nomadic kind of existence, so you kind of think camels, because I'm not sure what else it would have been. I pray maybe donkeys could have done the job. But for us to rule out camels, again, you know, the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. And it may hinge on a little bit on when Genesis was written, too. And there's, I think, a legitimate difference of opinion there, Don. When do you think Genesis was actually put to paper? Or papyrus? Or scrolls?
Right. Well, that's a good question, and certainly, you know, parts of Genesis, the earlier parts, were probably passed down as very, very, as stories or a poem.
Oral tradition.
Oral tradition. Mm-hmm. But it had to be pretty accurate, because by the time, of course, you get to Jesus, when he comes on the scene, we have a sect called the scribes, who their job was to make sure that anything, you know, any scripture that was written 100% accurately. Mm-hmm. And they had methods in the language for, every letter in Hebrew represents a number. So they would count across the line and add up, you know, the total numeric value, and then they would count downwards. And if that wasn't what it was supposed to be, the whole scroll was destroyed.
But of course, the big unknown here, Don, is what ancient manuscripts actually existed at the time of Jesus, or even before that. There's another school of thought that says that the first five books, the Pentateuch, were actually written during the Babylonian captivity by Jews in Babylon in order to codify, to document the history of Israel, so that they could continue on with that knowledge and with those stories for future generations. There are others that say, no, it was written back, it was contemporary with the wandering in the wilderness, with the 40 years in the desert, that Moses himself actually wrote this down, or you scribes, or an assistant. We know that writing existed back then, and that would have been around 1400 BC, the time of the Exodus. Writing had been around for a long time up to that point. I mean, pens and papers weren't easily available. I imagine there was a certain class of people who knew how to write. Not everybody was literate, but it could have happened either way. We don't really have hard evidence, do we, as to when the first five books, or even just Genesis itself, was actually written down.
Well, no, and there's some evidence, a lot of evidence, that Moses wrote certainly a lot of Genesis, at least the earlier parts of Genesis. Was that from oral tradition or not? I mean, we definitely know, for example, that since he was trained in the upper courts in Egypt, that he had the ability of writing. And
probably had access to whatever written manuscripts existed in a library in a complex civilization like the Egyptians.
Right. And I'm sure that, you know, once he found out that his Hebrew roots, and then, later when he went to free God's people, somewhere along those lines, he started writing the history. So, and that's all really, you know, when we think about Genesis, you think, well, okay, is this really a historical account, or is it just a poem, or those type of questions? And the style in which it's written is definitely a very much a narrative or it's like, okay, here's an account of what happened in our past. Mm-hmm. Or what is happening right now. And very much kind of a historical document, if you will.
Now, I'm reading an e-book by Thomas Cahill now, and it's an e-book. It's on my Kindle, and it's called The Gifts of the Jews. And a listener had recommended the book to me after I talked about Michener's The Source on the air, and she said, well, you ought to read this too. And Thomas Cahill makes the point that Genesis marks a huge departure in the development of civilization, is really the first attempt at writing history, because prior to that time, it was epic poems, and it was creative writing. But at that point, there was an actual chronology. It was God's entrance, his insertion of himself into our timeline, that really gave us history, and the idea that there are things in the future to look forward to. It gets very complex, but the essence of it is, it was Genesis that marked the departure point from epic poems to histories.
Well, that's right. We've talked about some of those epic poems here on this program, and just reading Genesis, is, you don't have to get very far in when you get to the genealogies, and there's some very specific information in the genealogies as to, for example, when when such and such it kind of lived, and then when he was born, when he died, how long, how old was he when he died? How old was he when he had, the first son? And why is all of that information recorded in Genesis? You really have to scratch your head and say, okay, why is that there? Mm-hmm. I mean, is it there for us as a calendar? which I believe it is. That's one of the purposes. And then to specifically name the patriarchs in that fashion, why is even that there? Mm-hmm. And there's some very interesting, information, because the names of the patriarchs in the order in which they come tell a story. So the information in Genesis is just chock full of the information that's more than just two-dimensional. I mean, it begins to really pop out at you once you start asking the right questions.
Mm-hmm. And even more indicative of that that need for accuracy and specificity on the part of the writers of those books was the fact that they would include slightly variating or slight variations of the same story. I mean, if they were simply trying to make a point, they would have written one version and said, this is it. But as they inherited various versions of some stories, you see elements of all those woven together there. And to me, that says they wanted to present history as history and not as folklore, even though it may have come down to them in the oral tradition.
Right. And then you also find, later on, obviously, in the Bible, in 1 Kings and 2 Kings and 1 Chronicles and 2 Chronicles, I mean, that is, no doubt, very much a historical documentation of what this king did and how he lived and how he led the people into sin and all, who came next, and was he worse than the first king, and all of the various things that happened.
And more specificity there, in that they even tell you in what year of what reign. I mean, they had no way of numbering the years except from the creation. So to identify when something was happening, it was always in the eighth year of the reign of so-and-so. It was the whatever monarch was in power. So, yeah, that says history. That says history loud and clear, I think. Interesting. Camels before the 10th century B.C.? Well, there's no reason to think not. And there is some evidence to indicate there was. Maybe not a huge domestication of camels within Israel itself, but certainly in the region, probably up into Mesopotamia and certainly down in Egypt, there were domesticated camels. So to think that they weren't crossing back and forth across Israel at that time is more of a stretch, I think, than believing that they were there to begin with, and accepting the accounts in Genesis, whether or not they were written in the 5th century B.C. or the 13th century B.C. So interesting stuff. And archaeology, even an archaeologist will tell you got to take it kind of with a grain of salt until you start correlating your research with many others. And even then, the findings are somewhat tentative, and you keep looking because you're never quite satisfied with the answers you get. Archaeology, I guess, as much art as it is science. Don, it's been fun talking. David, I haven't given David a chance to get a word in edgewise here. I'll just...
What's that? What? What? Well, that hardly ever happens.
Well, I know.
Well, I just kind of looking around at camels. I found that donkeys were domesticated in Africa between 3 and 4,000 B.C. And so it seemed like they predated camels. I've seen a couple of references to, theories that camels came along and allowed Israel or the Middle East to expand their trade routes, because camels could walk further. They got longer legs.
So they carry bigger loads, yeah.
Yeah, they could carry bigger loads, and they expanded trade routes all the way to India. On the Wikipedia page, it says that there is a Conservapedia page.
A Conservapedia?
Yeah. I've never heard of it.
I've never heard of it, no.
I've never heard of it. And it's for those who think that Wikipedia is a bit too leftist. a bit too liberal for most serious study. And you know, I haven't looked at it, but I read about it at the end of the book. But interesting. But there are six camel-like mammals in the family, and two of them are the dromedary and the Bactrian, the ones we're talking about. The other four are South Americans.
Oh,
llamas and alpacas.
Oh, that's
and
true. Yeah, I forgot camels. About that.
Mm-hmm. Right,
they're out of the family. Vicuña, the guanaco, and stuff. And you know, it doesn't. You know, I haven't seen anything that in my just real quick survey that definitively states that camels were domesticated at this point. I've seen the reference many times that all camels living today are domesticated or have been domesticated or resulted from domesticated camels. There are no wild camels anymore.
Well, there were up till not too long ago, though, because I know the U.S. Army actually brought in camels to experiment with them in our desert Southwest, and gave up on the experiment rather quickly. And some of the camels were just let loose and were around for a couple generations. But yeah, I think they're long gone by now. That would be something to be walking.
Yeah, I think I saw a reference too that originally the camel was domesticated not for travel, not for carrying things, but for their milk.
Hmm. Okay.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And that, of course, brought the invention of the very tall stools, too.
Right.
Now, the thing, just talking about this story, kind of reminds me from, how do you know when an animal or insect or whatever goes extinct? And you declare that this species or subspecies or whatever has now gone extinct. It's the same type of question as the camels. How do you know when the camels were domesticated? Mm-hmm. If you only find these bones, you don't know if the particular species that you're looking at has gone extinct, because you can't look at every part of the world and say, okay, I've now searched the whole world and I'm not finding them, and so therefore they're extinct.
You know, you remind me of do you remember the BC comic strip from years ago?
Yes.
And there was one that was right on theme here. They had a kind of an intellectual caveman in the BC comic strip. He always wore glasses. He had, thick rimmed glasses. And he was out wading in the stream one day and he saw a fish jump. And he said, "Oh, it's an ichthyopod, ichthyi. It's the last one." And he grabbed it. And he was looking at it. And he said, "Oh, I've got the last one." And just then another one jumped beside him. And so he took this one and beat it against a rock.
And then there was something that a supposed extinct species that somebody found some. And so obviously
you hear that now that we thought it was gone. Mm-hmm. And sure. Here we have an example of it. So yeah, that determination is kind of iffy as well. Well, archaeology, if it's a science at all, is not a precise science, not like in laboratories and research scientists, but they do use scientific tools and it makes for some interesting discussions. So were there or were there not camels in Abraham's time? I don't think you can rule it out, not based on this article, not based on these findings from Tel Aviv University. Our podcast will be up later on today, this conversation, that is, with a link to these articles. So if you'd like to read them, you can, and I would encourage you to do that. BrokenRoadRadio.com, there's a podcast tab at the top, and you'll find all of our past conversations with Dr. Don and with other folks, complete with a little description of what each, the topic of each podcast. You can download them to listen to at your convenience or listen to them on the website, either one. And we encourage you to do that. Dr. Don Clark, biochemist, and again, member of the board at creationmoments.com. Again, that website, well worth some time, worth your visit. And Don, we thank you. Thank you very much for dropping by, and we'll look forward to next Monday.
Okay.
And music continues on our Broken Road Radio Monday with Jay Leach on the guitar. Take care, Don.
Thank you.
See you, Don.